Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country. The kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Welcome back to Comic Book Nation's Invincible Season 2 recap segment. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and with me is Comic Book's assistant managing editor and fellow Invincible fan, Mr. Joe, a.k.a. J.K. Schmidt, is with me again. What's up, man?
Not much. It's been a minute since we got to talk about the part one or part two premiere, and so I'm excited to get to join back in and to talk about this finale.
Yeah, you have the expert strategy. You just come in for the bookends of Invincible. You're like, hot premiere, hot finale. I'll be there for that. All the stuff in the middle, you guys can sort out, which is a good way to go. But getting right into it, we are here to discuss the season two finale of Invincible, season two, episode 8, and which is called, I didn't even write down. I Thought You Were Stronger. These episode titles get me sometime. And if you don't know, if you haven't been following along, I am just a fan of the Invincible animated series. I never read the comic, but JK is an avid comic reader as well. And you went through this whole saga on the page before. So we always like to give you guys like our frame of reference for when we'll be talking so you know what to expect. But all right, this is going to be full spoilers. Obviously, this is a recap episode, so we can't recap without spoilers. But just so it's out there, we are going to be talking about the finale of Invincible Season 2. Plus the season as a whole, and even just kind of without spoiling what we might expect for season 3. So, JK, as somebody who read the comics and kind of knows this show obviously does some things differently, but still follows a lot of the same beats. This, for me as an animated series viewer, was the big come around back to the premiere episode where Angstrom Levy, this person who got set up as a villain in the beginning, finally has made his move against Mark, and they have what I can only describe as, you know, once again, one of the craziest fights that only Invincible seems to do and put spins on, you know, on comic book lore in a way that you're just like, that makes you just say WTF, like in the best kind of way, like constantly. It's hilarious that we're in the midst of all this multiverse saga stuff on like the DC side, on the Marvel side. And people are like, oh, I'm so tired of this. But this episode definitely played with multiverse in a much different way. And I was riveted. This is kind of another, just like the season one finale. This is kind of what I love about Invincible. And we'll get into the deeper discussion, but it paid off so many things that we'll get into when we kind of dissect this season deeper. But on the scale of just a spectacle for an episode, it was pretty awesome. And I was surprised how much there was in this episode because that fight is over.
It's been pretty long. I feel like every single episode in this back half has been like around 45 to 50 minutes. And, you know, they really kind of give you everything that you'd be expecting from Invincible tackling sort of multiverse shenanigans.
Yeah. And yeah, when this fight's over, it's only 25, 26 minutes into the episode. So there is a whole ass like other episode that deals with kind of the epilogue of season two. And I feel like a lot of people are going to, we record these beforehand. So I got to do a little Karnak here. If you know that old Johnny Carson reference, I'm old, but I can already see Twitter kind of doing the calculations. You know, Angstrom Levy, we got X amount of time of him on screen and now I'm unhappy. And what was this season about? And blah, 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 blah. But yeah, they did like a whole like comic series worth of multiverse shenanigans in this one episode. And I think it's understated, because I've now watched this episode several times, what actually is happening. And I wonder how it played out in the comics, because it's a longer form. But Mark is in these dimensions, and there's that one thing around the campfire when that montage where he's just saying, I don't even remember like how long I've been gone now. I can't track time, and how long have I been doing this, and time moves differently in some of these dimensions. And there is a transition that happens to him during this fight. It's like a good Star Wars duel. It's the talking and the character development, and you know, when he ultimately happens, when he beats this man into a literal pulp, is bringing us around to what season two was really all about, was the trauma of what happened with his dad and the question of who am I in this context that I now find myself in.
And it's all building to that crescendo of him now that he has an idea of who he is. And it's pretty depressing, the realization, but it's all heading down, you know, in season three, where we're probably going to get the opening shots of the Viltrumite War. And it's, I mean, I see the criticism that you kind of alluded to, you know, and I get it. I feel similar on a different level. But I think, you know, kind of the things that you mentioned about the strengths of this show is that, and this is in the comic too, is that Robert Kirkman loves superhero comics. And this is definitely a love letter to all the fun things that he loved when he grew up reading Marvel, DC, G.I. Joes, Transformers, and all that stuff. And now he executes it on this scale in a way that we're familiar with all these tropes. We've seen it millions of times before, but never like this. And to see it executed like this is pretty, you know, mind-boggling. I never thought we'd get an Invincible animated series like this, and especially executed as well as it is. It's just, it's crazy. It's crazy to think about.
Yeah, let's get into some of the fun multiverse parts before we get into the deeper, serious adulting stuff. But so we have this multiverse. I mean, people are going to be, we will be at Comic Book, and JK is probably already writing down a bunch of articles about all the Easter eggs we get in this multiverse fight, from The Walking Dead to Mad Max World to every kind of dinosaur movie where dinos have taken over the Earth and the obvious things. I believe, who is it? What's the actor's name? Is it Josh Keaton? Is his name?
I believe so.
Yeah. Who was the voice of Peter Parker in Spectacular Spider-Man. Obviously, we finally get the answer of, because everybody's been like, ooh, who is this? And, you know, are we getting this crossover? And we get a kind of knockoff Spider-Man crossover that I really enjoyed. They never say a name, but he has an A. We can assume it's Arachnid something, like Arachnid Man or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he's fighting Professor Ock, and, you know, that whole exchange is great. There's a little ode to Batman, the second ode to Batman in this season, where, you know, Mark goes to this set to this dimension. He's like kind of ragging on Batman's name and all of that. And so, yeah, there's a lot of fun Easter eggs in this episode for comic fans. And like you said, it does what I love about this series, which is Robert Kirkman, and we say his name and we leave out the artist. What was it, Ryan Otterman?
Ryan Otley and Corey Otley. Walker.
Yeah, Corey Walker. Yeah. You know, them in a combination, just their love. This is at once, like you said, a love letter of superhero tropes, but also an examination of them and able to turn them on their head in some interesting, and I hate to use this term because it's never really applies to this genre, but in more kind of like real world consequence terms, as if, you know, imagine this in modern times for a modern kid and, you know, what it would be like with these deeper issues of family and identity and stuff. So I also think that, at least for me, as somebody coming to the animated series, like Engstrom Levy was an interesting character, but you didn't, the way he's set up, you don't need him to be this character that we spend so much time with, because he's a composite of all this time, all these experiences. Like, he's seen everything, and throughout the season, we've seen him just walking through dimensions. We got the sense of how, you know, who this guy is, but he's really just a plot, more like a plot device for taking us, the viewer, through this different kind of context and point of view of who Mark is. Like, we are so kind of ensconed in this idea that Mark is the hero of the story, but through Engstrom Levy, we see, like, no, there's a lot of times that Mark is not the hero, and it suggests how easy it could be for him to slide into being this evil thing, which is what this episode kind of centers on in this thing, when he kind of finally does snap and beat this guy to death. And that scene with Engstrom's son is horrific. Like,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
It really does. It really sets up, I think, like you said, that Engstrom Levy, yeah, as far as, you know, the screen time that he gets and him not being this person that not, you know, pulling all these strings in the back. I think the cool thing about it is that we see Engstrom Levy, you know, and he understands that Mark and, you know, his father are can be forces of evil. You know, they're just as dangerous as they are, you know, heroic in some universes. But the cool thing is, like, how petty he becomes towards this version of Mark, who is the most heroic one that he's come across. And he, like, it's so cool that he's so twisted that it turns him into basically trying to corrupt this person or punish him to a degree, you know, like that. Well, everything that happens with his mom is just like, you feel for it, you know, you just like, I want to see Mark kick this guy's ass. And then when Mark, you know, he gets put through this multiversal fight where he's being like stranded in different dimensions and punched through to different dimensions and, you know, experiencing all these different things. And then he finally kind of lets loose and it culminates in just the way that Invincible always does so friggin' well, of just this like really brutal, brutal scene where Mark, you know, does lose control. That Viltrumite side of him comes out and he ends up just beating this guy to death and staying stranded. You know, he can't even stop himself from using this guy and his powers to get back home. And he's just stuck there in this desolate wasteland apocalypse area, just with this body that he just created. It's just, it was very satisfying conclusion to the Engstrom Levy storyline, I felt like.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter your search based on the qualities that are most important to you. Then you can book a free 15-minute consultation call with any therapist you're interested in seeing, so you can get a feel for whether they're the right fit before you commit to a full-length session. Alma also makes it easy for mental health care providers to navigate insurance. That's why 95% of therapists in their directory accept insurance for sessions, so you can find care that's affordable without stressing about the paperwork. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy60 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy60.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Oh, I'm sitting here muting. Sorry, guy. I'm talking on mute. I'm going off too. I was just going off. I was just going off about like how right you were. And shout out to the voice cast, because this is why you get this voice cast. Like Steven Yeun in that wasteland, when he's losing it and afterwards, and he's trying to rationalize and talk to himself into, oh, like I had to do, you know, that's scary. And I haven't been that scared since Ziggy's skinny ass like shot somebody and then lost it immediately in The Wire season 2. That's what keeps me from ever doing too much violence, because those scenes are very real and very terrifying. It's like, yeah, it feels great to let loose in the moment, as I now tell my 5-year-old son, but like what happens afterwards when you like feel that, when that sick, like, you know, you have to look at the consequences of that, it makes you sick. Like, yeah, that stuff is really kind of terrifying, and the voice cast does it so well. And also, to the people who say like this thing gets overblown or has too many characters, like there's a reason we invested so much of that time in part one in Debbie's storyline. Like Debbie steps up and is like a real G hero in this one. Like when she's fighting, and she's fighting for her like bastard, you know, her son of a bitch husband's, you know, new kid, and protecting him and doing all that. Like that's such a big arc from where she started at the beginning of this season. And I loved the way that this, you know, the scenes in the home with her and Angstrom are just as tense and exciting as the ones with Mark going through these dimensions, because that's what grounds comic book stuff. And her conversations with Angstrom about, like you said, like, oh, you're just pissed because this is a dimension, the one dimension where Mark turned out really good and you turned out to be the villain and you can't reconcile that. And then something, he snaps her arm, and just like an invincible being invisible, just we see her, Debbie is sitting there with that broken arm for quite some time, and we're just like, oh my god, like
hanging by a
yeah
thread.
But it's just like none of that would have been earned if we didn't do the storyline with her and her trying to rediscover her resilience, realizing who she is, because that's the culmination when she says to him, I'm the one who, you know, because he's trying to get in her head, and he's like, in so many universes, you know, you join them. And she's like, well, not in this one. I'm the reason why this planet's safe. And, you know, that thing that she's grabbed onto of, yo, I realize my power. And it's not like these guys who sling their fist. I was there. I taught this kid. I did thing. I nurtured him. And all that stuff I did is the sole reason why he's not, like, freaking out and becoming this other person. Great stuff that you don't usually get from
superhero.
Power
of a mother, right? The power of a mom.
I mean,
you know?
And it's real. Like, again, like I said, not to bring my real life into this, but that's what I tell my wife every time. I'm like, yo, you need to take this kid out and like take him on a date or something, because the difference between a little boy who becomes a serial killer and a little boy who doesn't is pretty much your mother. Like, you know, I have certain powers as his dad, but like, I, you know, the difference between Norman Bates and a healthy citizen is mother. So, you know,
well, we as dads, we have a different relationship with our, you know, as kids, and, you know, kids always, you know, moms are always have that different role. And I know, like with my wife, I know in my own mom, it's just, it's a different thing. And so I really enjoy how the show really kind of set that up. And also, you know, just showing how Mark feels so alone. And, you know, because they did the whole thing with Ashley this season with, the, you know, their eventual drifting apart and breakup because, you know, Mark is invincible and Mark feels guilty when he's not being invincible. She feels guilty when he's not being invincible. And now we get this Mark kind of realizing, like, I have to be better, and putting all of these expectations and pressure on himself. And it just breaks his mom's heart. You know, like I just thought it was such a good way to wrap up the emotional themes of like what basically this entire season has been about, and really kind of not wrap it up in a way that, you know, everything is solved by the end of the runtime. It's more just that, like, it's an existential issue that continues to develop and transform into something different that now Mark has to face. And it's all coming to a head with these Viltrumites, man. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah, let's talk about that. So let's get into season 2 as a whole, and setting up season 3 is our last bit here before we get out of here. Sophomore seasons are hard. They really are, because you have to expand. You start with a simple premise in a season one. It's like, here's this character. Here's this arc. Here's Mark. Here's a secret about his dad. This is all going to turn into an S show eventually. Stay tuned. And you do. And that's easy. Then we got a big payoff, a big emotional payoff, a big action payoff. And it's like, where do you go from here? Like you said, this season is all the existential. The it's at once an external world building season and an internal building season for our central characters. And I think by the end of this, not everything is solved cleanly. Like, did I need Donald, Rick, and what's William and all that stuff? Maybe not. Like, maybe not. That stuff is not as heavy as I needed. Did I need that Adam and Eve special? Yeah, I needed more of that. Did I need these storylines with Mark, Debbie, and even the bits we got with Nolan and where that ends up? Yeah, I did, because when we get to the end of this season, and like, yeah, Debbie's wanted, you know, and the deeper storyline of her wanting him to be a normal kid and not like his father and all that stuff, where Mark coming around to having to reconcile, like, there are some ways he does have to be like his dad, like that he has to be this kind of, you know, the hero, the Viltrum, and acknowledge that Viltrumite side of him and do all that, and the confusion of all that and the despair of all that, like, that's big. And just the last line in this post-credit scene where Nolan's just like, I think I miss my wife, and you're just like, oh man, like, now I'm already excited to see where this goes next, because we have such deep emotional portraits of these characters that mm-hmm. you know it's going to galvanize a whole series of actions. And what I love about it is none of it's kind of congruent. Like, they're not on the same page. Debbie's wanting one thing, Mark's wanting another, and now Nolan's made this big switch where he apparently wants something else different. And when these things come together, I'm already in for season three on that alone. And like you said, there's also this small Viltrumite problem still hanging in the wings. So, yeah, I think they did a good job of setting this up. And I know some people are going to have a problem with how this season probably ends, because it ends with, like, Mark and Eve in this kind of emotional kind of existential downbeat rather than like a thrilling cliffhanger or something like that. But
classic sitcom, will they, won't they set up, you know, that
yeah,
maybe they should solve that right away when season three starts. I don't think I can do another season of Mark and Eve pining over each other, to be honest with you. That might be the only down part of it. But I mean, I think everything else, they earned it. At least you could say they earned it, that it wasn't forced. You know, that whole scene with future Eve coming in the end and kind of, you know, telling Mark, like, you need to go tell her so she can move on or do something, you know, make a choice, because she's been sitting there for decades probably pining over this guy, and now she has the chance to kind of correct that mistake. And so it's interesting, man. It's kind of a cool spot that they left us in.
Yeah. And this is what I love, because as a non-reader, like, if a person didn't read the comic, like, this stuff, the way that this show just begins to turn a new storyline or finally push you into a storyline that's been building in a way you didn't see coming, like, is crazy. Like, yeah, nowhere in my mind when I was watching this episode and everything with Angstrom Levy that I would think Mark stuck in this wasteland would then set up this entire other storyline about the Viltrumite War and everything that happened and then this other romantic storyline with Eve, like, through this future Eve. And I was just like, wait, what? And, like, all that information that you get in that scene, and then, you know, Mark kicks back to his normal universe, is, again, already, like, I'm like, there's so much mess here. Like, we've been talking about X-Men 97 a lot, and there's so much mess here that I love that I'm already kind of in for. And I can already tell season three is going to be 10 times more exciting in terms of everything that's going to be happening. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, we're just gonna get more Alan the Alien. We know.
I was about to say that.
Back, you know, so that's gonna be great.
I was about to say, I'm so curious. I need just an episode of Nolan and Alan the Alien doing something
prison
together
or something.
Yeah, like a prison break.
Be so good.
Yeah, and just the two of them trying to relate to each other and have a conversation and stuff. I will watch just that. Like, I'm in for season three just for that.
Mm-hmm.
So, all in all, what do you think, just final, last topic, quick answer, what do you think the release strategy should be for season three?
I think at that point you have to kind of go back to basics at the beginning. You know, it's got to be sort of episodic in a way that, an adventure of the week, a villain of the week, some sort of, major world ending crisis again. I did enjoy how a lot of the threats interwove this season and built on each other and kind of, the second half begun with a bunch of different things happening at once. But I think that the binging nature of the show was kind of lost over the week to week releases. So like it was really hard to get into these, cliffhangers when you have to wait and then they're just resolved in the first 30 seconds of the next show, like Netflix style. And that's not what this was. So I really hope they kind of get to a little bit more self-contained stuff before, with the same deft way that they build upon it into like a bigger storyline, that being the thing that takes over the second half of the season. I really think that it's just going to be, you got to go back to basics, episodic one and done adventures, go from there.
And do you think we should do it as weekly releases, just release the whole season, or do you think we should ever touch something like this two-part split again?
The two-part split, like you said, I think you alluded to that it kind of sacrificed a little bit of the momentum. I just think they got to have a plan of what the release strategy is going to be when they're writing the episodes, so that way they have an idea and they're not sitting there trying to scramble and do it as a weekly release or do something afterwards. Prime Video has shown that they can get away with both, like they have shown that they can get away with a full dump, four episode dump or eight episodes at once. But the things that the popular shows that they do, we've kind of seen that they do like two episode premiere, three episode premiere, and then week to week after that. If they just craft the episodes around that strategy, I don't think it'll be a problem. Don't really know what happened for season two, but I mean, we got a second season of Invincible after years and years of waiting. So hopefully they have a better executed plan for season three.
And hopefully we will be back here on Comic Book Nation to talk Invincible season three much sooner before much later, because yeah. All right. Thank you, Joe, yeah. J.K. Schmidt, for coming on and talking Invincible with me. Your knowledge of the comics and just, your knowledge of the show is always invaluable. Check out everything on Comic Book Nation feeds. We are an entire nation of shows. If you want to kind of check out our main show and talk with us live, we do that every Friday on this channel and on the main comic book channel on Twitter and on your favorite podcast platforms. We also have Anime Initiative, which covers all things anime, Quick Save, which covers gaming, and The Pull List, which picks the best comics of the week and tells you all about them. Check that all out. Thank you. We are Comic Book Nation. See you, Invincible fans out there. Peace.
Adios.